Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome to Investing Simplified, and I'm your host, Chuck Price, with the Price Financial Group Wealth Management Firm. And in studio with me this morning is Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CPA Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
And we're going to be here to answer your questions. If you've got a question, pick up the phone, give us a call, because I know Kevin's just chomping at the bit to answer some tax questions, and we can see if we can stump the tax guy. And give us a call at 503-417-7626, toll-free 800-990-0750. And as a little teaser for later on the show, when we get to the tax investigator, I've got a couple of questions for Kevin to kind of see how well he's up, and I've been getting them from my clients of late, and we're going to see if we can get Kevin to dig into his brain trust and pull out some answers for us.
Well, that not a very big resource for me to dig into there, but
you're too modest.
Yeah, well, the tax code ocean is mighty big, so we'll see what we can do.
Is that the truth? That is really the truth. Well, listen, this show is all about investing, all about saving you money, all about helping you plan your financial future and paying less taxes as you go. And estate planning, and as we mentioned this morning, Carl is off, I guess, this weekend and relaxing a little bit, but he'll be back hopefully next week. And so Kevin and I are going to answer your questions. So don't hesitate to pick up the phone and call us. I'm going to jump right into, you know, what's going on in the marketplace. And we had an unbelievable week in the market last week. And anybody who watches the market and is seeing what's happening in the marketplace, has got to ask yourself, why? Why? We've stopped QE, the promise of another QE. Now, I keep hearing on the financial shows on TV, if you watch them, they have to have a reason for every single thing. I mean, it's either Ebola, it's the president makes a comment, the Fed makes a comment, the wind blows the wrong way in Germany. You know, they've got an answer for every solution. And the matter of fact is, the economy is a really big boat out in the middle of the ocean. And it goes back and forth, back and forth, and eventually heading to its destiny, which we all hope is an upward motion. But the reality is, that's a big ship. And it's very tough to turn that ship and go one way or the other. However, every once in a while, it hits a big dip and regresses back to where it was coming from, and then has to go back and build back up the momentum. And what's happening right now is the market had taken a big hit in 08, actually 08 through 09, and took a big hit, down as much as 50% at one time. And now it's coming back, and it's came back and it's broke through the highs. And if you listen to this show, we have Harry Dent on here all the time. We have Rodney Johnson on here once a month. Both of them come on the third week of the month. And they've been saying for a long time, we're going to have a correction, but they said some key things if you've been listening to our show. One, we were going to break through the all-time highs. They said to really watch on the S&P. When the S&P broke 2,000, well, we broke 2,000 this week. They also said that, you know, they still say the Dow's going to go to about 18. So we're only at about 17,390. So if you listen to those key marks based on their graphics, and if you've bought in Harry's book, if you haven't, if you want to pick one up in my office, give me a call. I've got some free copies. If you call my office, tell us you're a regular listener, I will give you a free copy of Harry Dent's book. You can go on Amazon and buy it, too, if you want to, but I can give you a free copy. If you're a regular listener to the show, give me a call at the office, stop by. I'll give you a free copy of the book. No questions asked. You know, we won't get your name and address and won't hound you or anything else to give you the book and read it, because education is power. And the more you know, the better we will look for you to work with us. And I know that's kind of strange, but it's a fact. The more you know, the better investing with us becomes. I want my clients educated. The clients who know what we're doing, know the strategies, understand it and appreciate it more than people who think they can beat the market. And that's a fool's game. So the reality is you got to have a strategy. We believe very strongly in strategy. And by the way, if I do want to drive you to my website. Go to pfgwm.com. And my other site is askthefinancialdoctor.com, which we're using primarily to promote the book Investing Simplified. That will be out next week, hopefully, no later than the 10th of November. And I'll be introducing that on some regular radio shows here in the Portland area, doing book interviews. And so we'll have some books available for listeners. But that'll be coming out probably, we'll start that on the 17th of November. So anyway, looking at the market, the Dow Jones this last week, and as of yesterday, the Dow Jones closed at 17,390. We had a monster week. The market was up 4, 5, 6% almost. I mean, it was really came up. The Dow Jones closed at 17,390.52. Now, where do we stand versus 10,907 of 14,164.53? Well, we're up exactly 22.78% in 7 years and 3 weeks. That's an average annual return of 3.23. Still nothing to get excited about. If you go back and look at 12/31/99, the Dow closed at 11,497.12. And it's up 51.26 for 13 years and 10 months. That's an average annual return of 3.71% per year. Now, it's really important, and I'm going to say this. I say average, I really should say real rate of return, because it's not the average annual return. If you go back and look at the average annual return, the S&P is up over 6%. But that is not real money. That is a fake number. It's not a real number. And I've talked on this show a lot about average annual return versus real rate of return. And the numbers I give on my show, and I don't know of any other show in the country that does this, I actually give you the real rate of return. That is, if you had a dollar in there and that dollar grew, or you had $100,000 in there, and actually we use $100,000 in our illustration. If you had $100,000, that $100,000 in the S&P for the first 13 years of this decade was only worth $144,000. That's over 13 years, $44,000 in gain. That's not much, guys. It's not 6%. 6%, just simple math, would tell you it'd be, $60,000 a year? So, you know, you'd be up a lot more than 44,000. So, excuse me, 6,000 a year times 13 would be 78,000. So you'd be up 78,000. You're only up 48. What does that tell you? That tells you the rate of return is just what I quoted here, 3.23. The reality is it's not done that well. This is the worst decade in investing in almost 90 years. 90 years, folks. Yeah, you got to really think about that. Like I said, the Dow for the 13 years and 10 months is up 3.71, less than 4%. Now, if we take a look at the S&P over the same periods of time, the S&P closed at 2018, 0.05. And if we go back and look at 10,907 and it hit the high of 15,65.15, so in that 7 years and 3 weeks, we are up 4.1% per year. Now, that's better than the Dow, but growth stocks, we're talking about the top 500 growth stocks in America. It ought to be doing, it better be doing more than 4%. I mean, that's really not a lot to praise about. The S&P, if we go back to 1231.99, it closed at 1469. So the real rate of return over 13 years and 10 months is 37.35%. That's an average of 2.70%. Nobody could be happy for that kind of return over 13 years. Now, I'm gonna say something here about investors, because we get all types of investors. In my office, primarily, we handle people's serious money. That's money that they don't want to take a high risk on. We're a very low risk office. We practice low risk. If you want to do high risk, you know, we have some investments that have very high risk and have very high returns, but they also have very high dips. You can't. The biggest problem to get to people, and I have people call me who we put them in a very conservative portfolio, one that since 1992 hasn't had a losing year, and it's returned right about 8.5% over that period of time, net return to the investor. And yet, when we have a bad quarter or bad year, people are saying, well, you know, the S&P is making 10%. Well, yeah, but we're 85% less risk than the S&P. And when the S&P takes a dip at 30 or 40%, we're not going down. We're holding the principal. And what you have to understand, if you don't understand recovery time, in fact, I just did a YouTube that's going to be out, and it's another whiteboard. It's our second series of whiteboard presentations. And next week, it'll be on my site, both sites, pfgwm.com and askthefinancialdoctor.com. And in this whiteboard, I talk about why is it that people who brag on the air, they have low fees, never tell you what the return is? Because the only thing they have to sell you is a low fee. You can buy the lowest fee in the industry by buying the S&P 500. It's 20 basis points. But would you really want the kind of returns I just read to you? That's the S&P index. And I hate to say the word cheap, but if you go cheap, you're going to get cheap results on your investment returns. Our fees are not the lowest in town. We're probably the highest. But I'll tell you what, I've not seen anybody that can compare net return year in and year out compared to our investment portfolio clear back to 1992. And not having a losing year, always returning positive cash flow. Some years not very good. You know, maybe 34 basis points or 1% or 2%. But most of all important, preserving your principal, making sure you have enough money to live to fight another day. And that's conservative investing. And if you're not a conservative investor, then you got to be willing to take the risk of having the volatility and having that roller coaster investment where you can go up 20% and you can go down 30%. It's all risk reward. So, well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. Just 1 second here. I did want to mention one other thing. Oil closed at 80.61. Gold closed at 11.73. Both were down lower, thank goodness. And the 10-year bond rate closed at 2.34. Fed still announcing, and some of the Fed guys are saying here, when the market starts getting volatile, they say we might do another QE or re-advise it. I think that's to try to hold the market in place. It's not going to work over the long haul. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified, and we're going to be talking about the tax investigator, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to hit him with a really good question that a lot of listeners out there, you're going to want to hear this. So we'll be right back.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
You are listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call, 503-417-7626, and we'll gladly take your question on investing and taxes, and we'll listen to your legal questions, but I don't think the advice would be so good without Carl here. So, but definitely give us a call. We do want to hear from you, and usually your question is something that is on somebody else's mind too. So we will we look forward to hearing from you. So, Chuck, to continue your train of thought there, I read a recent news article that showed the average self-investor, how they have performed over the last 20 years compared to some of the various indices that are out there. For example, the S&P over 20 years has an annual return of about 9%, roughly. This is all the way back to 1994. Real Estate Investment Trust, a little higher, 10.2%. International stocks, a little over 6%. Gold has returned about 6% over this time. Of course, there was the big run-up the last 5 years or so. Bonds have done roughly about 6%. Real estate, 3%. You notice I've worked my way down this, and I haven't gotten to the average individual investor's annual return over 20 years. Inflation, 2.4% over the last 20 years. Average investor, 2.5%. So I think it fits in right with what you're saying in your last segment, that having somebody who, and there's a number of reasons for that, and a lot of it is just knowing the game and being educated, as you said, to know how things are done.
You know, Kevin, when I was at Harry Dent's Economic Irrational Summit last year, we had the chairman and the founder of Everbank, who also has a company called Evertrade. And he showed the 10-year and 20-year results, and I believe it was through Dalbar, that they showed the actual return, and it was actually a negative 3.
Oh, really?
Yeah, over 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Real rate of return. Now, you're using average annual return there. But real rate of return was a negative 3.
Wow.
So the fact is most people don't make money. And I could tell you from people coming in and looking at their investment accounts, they normally only talk about the times they hit the home run. They don't talk about the strikeouts.
That sounds like gambling in Vegas.
Pretty close.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so you had a question.
Yes, I did. Actually, I had a client in the other day, and they asked me, I thought, a really great question. And I was trying to call you, but of course, you were playing hooky again. But no, I'm just joking about that part. But I thought I would save this for the show. And a lot of our clients are retired, and they're taking their RMDs. And that's required minimum distribution once you hit age 70 and a half for our listeners, in case many of them people out there are not taking their required minimum distributions yet. And in the past, we've been able to take that RMD, and instead of taking it, paying the taxes on it, we could have it paid directly to a charity, not have it show on our income tax, and be a nice tax-free gift to the nonprofit organization. And my understanding is that last year that went away, but a lot of people have heard that it's back, that we can use it. So I'm going to ask the man who knows the rest of the story.
All right, Paul Harvey here.
Yeah.
No, Well, you know, you probably did try to call me, and it was one of those times I looked over at the caller ID and declined to take the call. So,
whoa,
yeah, no,
wow, talk about a burn.
No. So the answer to your question is yes and no. It's a difficult thing right now regarding many of the tax provisions that have benefited us over the last decade, and as you know, they sunsetted in 2010. They re-extended them, and now they're talking about possibly re-extending them or something along those lines. And we won't know until after the elections. Currently, as it sits, you can't do it for 2014. It expired. The ability to make a charitable contribution directly from your IRA expired at the end of 2013. You can't do it for 2014, although it's almost assured to go through and to be extended. But Congress is waiting until the 11th hour to give us assurance on that. And it's just, it just hamstrings a number of decisions. Along the same lines, small businesses, there's a provision called Section 179 expensing, and that allows you to immediately deduct the full price of equipment as opposed to depreciating it. So when you buy a large piece of equipment, you can write that whole thing off up to some certain limitations in 1 year, a very nice thing to manage your taxes.
You know, Kevin, makes me wonder, is this all because of the blockage of Harry Reid in the Senate? Because I know the House has passed something like 383 bills and passed them over to Harry Reid at the Senate, and Harry Reid has failed to bring one of them up for a vote with the Senate. He's able to stonewall any process going through, and therefore the president can say, well, Congress is doing nothing. What he really should be saying, if he was an honest president, he would be saying, Harry Reid, stop blocking all those taxations and all that legislation. Pass it through the Senate and bring it to me. And if the president really wants to get legislation passed, he would sign them. But the fact is, the House has passed 383 bills. The Senate has heard exactly zero of them. So is this part of that process that Harry Reid and the Senate are just blocking that and saying, you're going to have to wait till November?
That sounds like a rhetorical question that you already know the answer to. So I'll leave it at that. But
So that's an affirmative.
This has become fairly standard, though, with the tax provisions. Not a real priority for Congress. They really don't seem to care about letting people know what the playing field is, and you know, political posturing is more important than actually having a working set of rules.
I think most Americans would like to have the House and the Senate no longer get paid when they do stuff like this in their stalling time. What we should be able to do is just pull their pay and their pension all at once and say, okay, you're not getting paid until you take care of the people's work, not your political party. And that's one of the problems in this country with the two-party system. We have people that are more concerned about the Republican Party or the Democratic Party than they are really about doing the people's work. And we send them to Congress to do the people's work, not to do their party's work. And I, for one, American, and I bet you a lot of our listeners out there are just sick and tired of hearing this crap about the Democrats, the Republicans. I'd take them both and put them in a boat and sink it out in the harbor and start all over and have people come serve as a servant. And one of the things we need to do in this country is to quit paying our politicians, because we have the best politicians money can buy. And it's both parties, both political parties. And things like this that could really help, it could help charities, it could help nonprofit organizations, it could help religious organizations. It could certainly help my clients who are seniors, who are retired, that really would rather give that income to a nonprofit, and they've got to wait for somebody to make a decision in the House or the Senate. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and we'll see if that is done on a timely basis or not. So to just finish off the small business example, the expense limitation was $500,000, $500,000. And if it is not extended, it goes down to $25,000. Huge difference. And so basically people are standing on the sidelines, just waiting to see what's going to happen on that. So this is, you know, there's a number of things that are tied into this.
Now, explain how that directly affects an average taxpayer. Or a business taxpayer, I assume.
Yeah, well, they could go out, buy, say, $100,000 piece of equipment for their business, be able to write the full $100,000 off under the old rules, or if it's extended. Under the new rules, they'd only be able to write $25,000 of that off, which would make the difference of whether they are actually going to buy that piece of equipment or not. So pretty significant item to know.
Well, it also stymies the economy because when businesses are expanding, they're buying new products and new services. That's creating other jobs for other businesses. So you've got the boomerang effect.
Yeah,
this is going to stop a lot of year-end purchases by industry, and it's going to hurt the economics of the country.
Yeah, and you know, most things I'm reading seem to indicate that a lot of these things, if not all of them, which, you know, who knows what they mean by all of them, will get extended. But when, or if there's that, oh my goodness, they decided not to do this particular item. If that happens, then it will be a pretty difficult thing. So moving on, Chuck, we've got a list here of the 10 states with the worst death taxes. And I'm not going to spend much time on it, but I thought it would be interesting to see where we stand, and by we, I mean Oregon and Washington separately, in this list. And yes, both of those states make the top 10 list. So if you live in Oregon or Washington, you've got an estate over $1 million, you might consider looking elsewhere. And so the 2013 list has Washington at number 10 as the 10th worst state, and basically this is just an analysis of the threshold for which once exceeded, the estate tax kicks in, and then of course the applicable rate and how hard it's taxed. So last year, 2013, Washington was number 10, Oregon was number 4. We have moved up both states. Washington is number 9 and Oregon is number 2 in the nation.
Yeah, no, this is not the NCAA college football bowl.
That's right. Yes, this is, there's no playoff, there's no champion here. New Jersey held the top spot 2 years in a row because they have the lowest threshold, around $675,000, and their tax rate's fairly high. But Oregon keeps moving up because we haven't indexed the $1 million exemption to inflation. So that it's a continual tax hike on all of the citizens of Oregon every year without you knowing it. So,
you know, Kevin, one of the things that's probably most misunderstood on this, and a lot of misinformation about it, but I just want to say that if you go back and you look at people who are modest families who maybe have a small business or a farm where they have, you know, $4 to $5 million of assets. Now, $4 to $5 million to the average person sounds like an awful lot of money. But if it's tied up in land, it's not a lot of money, and it may not be producing anywhere near the income that would produce if you had that money invested. Because you have to work the land, you have to process the land, you have to grow whatever you're growing, you have to hope for good weather. And a lot of families get hurt. A lot of farm families and small business families, when you have an estate tax like this. And one of the things people don't understand is a billionaire like Bill Gates is going to probably spend less money percentage-wise on his estate than a farmer that has $5 million worth of property. Bill Gates is going to spend a lot less on his $40 billion estate, and so is Warren Buffett, than that poor farmer who's really dirt poor. I mean, he's rich in land, but he's poor in money.
Yep, that is right. You know, what's interesting is the U.S. is one of the few nations in the world that taxes inflation, and that tax is called the capital gains tax. Now, sometimes that capital gains tax truly taxes capital gains. many times it taxes inflation. And there, the international powers that be that are trying to set these new accounting policies that would apply to financial statements across the whole world so that there's some comparability there, this is one of the issues they're having to consider. And how this is how it works is, and we'll come back after our break and talk about
We're going to take a quick break and come back with the Knowledge Trust, and Kevin's going to tell you about something about taxes you don't want to miss.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
Comes to the IRS, money is their name. They like to get our money. We get less of it. They get more of it. So we're going to carry on with that, and Kevin's going to tell us some more exciting things about taxation.
That's right. So this is how the U.S. Taxes inflation. Say in 1950, you've bought yourself a brand new home for $25,000, and this is a nice little home. It's got incandescent light bulbs and indoor plumbing. It's got all the features you could want.
Hallelujah.
That's right. So over the course of the next 64 years, this piece of property wears down. And it is in a, today it's in a state of needed repair. And, but what's it worth? Is it worth fair market value, $25,000? No, it's worth $125,000. So here you are actually in a worse economic position, but if this were an investment property and you were to sell it, you would owe tax on $100,000. And if you had depreciated it, which it went down in value and ran down over the years, and you depreciated $25,000, you're actually paying tax on, you're recapturing the depreciation too. So you can see you're actually in a worse economic position, but you're going to be forking over, say 15% federal, 9% Oregon, you're going to be forking over, $24,000 on the $100,000 a gain for a house that is in worse shape than when you bought it.
And didn't keep up with inflation.
That's right. That's right.
So, that's like a double whammy.
So a lot of other countries don't do that, and they realize that. And, it's a problem in the capital gain rules because, yeah, there's stocks that are bought one day and 3 months later are sold for, significant gains, what have you, then that's capital gains. That has nothing to do with the passing of time, and the security is worth more than it was when you bought it. So you can see there's a significant problem in our tax regiment, and hopefully that's something that will be changed if we get on a, an international accounting standard, but I doubt it. So,
yeah, we talk about it, and you hear all the time, that we are a capitalistic country and that everything is derived on capitalism and stuff, but the reality is that concept of capitalism really works far better for the very, very wealthy and politicians, mm-hmm. because they're the ones who all benefit from this. And the average investor really gets the short end of the stick in the reality of real life. And people, you know, the problem is we let them do this to us. We let our politicians make these rules, and they make it sound like they're penalizing the real rich. So therefore, the real rich have an unfair advantage. Hey, listen, wake up and smell the roses here, folks. The real rich have so many more advantages, it's not even comparable to what we have for estate planning or for income protection. It's not even close. So what we should be fighting for is more opportunity for the average investor and the average person. And that's really what we need to be asking the government to do, and to take a little less of their own pocketbook change, meaning the politicians and the big government.
That's right. And, you know, the concept of an estate tax theoretically is an interesting concept to discuss. I mean, it's very much along the lines of double taxation. I mean, you're being, you know, they can call it something different. It's a transfer tax instead of an income tax, so you're not being double taxed. But technically, you've paid tax on all of the money that was used to accumulate your assets, and now when you die, you're being taxed on that again. So it's something that definitely needs to be looked at.
Yeah, Kevin, we got a call from Frank in Portland, and he's got a question. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And what's your questions?
I inherited some stocks that are on a DRIP, and I want to know if the gains on the year-to-year DRIP are taxable and need to be reported.
Okay, well, Kevin, you go ahead.
Yes, dividend reinvestment plan. If you own these in a regular brokerage account, any dividends that get reinvested are taxed normally. Yes, you're not getting the actual cash, but you are getting the income. You're rebuying the stock. It's reinvested in the stock. And so, yes, you will get a 1099 reporting that as taxable income for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You know, and we should let you know, too, Frank, are you still there?
Yes.
When you inherited that money, it's either on the date of death, or depending on how the attorney set it up, but it's either the date of death or the day you took over that account. But all the capital gains of that stock disappeared, and your cost basis become the date of death. So if you sell that stock, you don't have to pay capital gains. It all goes away. You understand that, and has a stepped-up basis.
Okay. Now, one of the stocks has gone down, so would that...
You'd have a loss. You'd have a capital loss. If you sold it, you could write off the loss up to $3,000 against your income.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet. Thank you. Very good question, Frank. Thank you. That was a great question, because a lot of people do inherit stuff, and we have clients all the time coming in who have an inheritance. They've inherited a brokerage account or some stocks or some bonds, and they don't know what they got to do as far as paying income tax, estate tax. And then we have some clients like Kevin right now. We're working on a case in Washington. That we're looking at how to divide the estate up so that we can eliminate paying estate tax. So there's all kinds of strategies you can do. The main thing is you need to have the plan set in place before somebody dies. That's the key.
That's true. Well, Frank brings up a good topic. What's your take on dividend reinvestments? Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think it's better just to buy your position and hold that position at that time?
Well, I think depending on the stock, and you know, we talk about recovery here, and sometimes Kevin, you and I've we've had people call in, and I'll tell them how the recovery on a stock mutual fund is done. Basically speaking, stock recovery is about 3.5 years versus a mutual fund recovery of 4.5 to 5 years. So individual stocks recover quicker than a mutual fund. So I say if you are a long-term stock buyer and you have a really good stock that has a track record of paying dividends, and you bought that stock for the dividend, you just hang on to that baby and keep reinvesting in it, because it ends up being a pretty good return. And if the market goes down, your dividend actually increases.
That's exactly right, and your buying power increases because now the stock is cheaper, and you accumulate more stock when it took a dip.
Absolutely, yeah. However, I will say this: I recommend if you're going to do dividend reinvestment, you might want to work with an advisor and do it through a brokerage account. So you can, particularly if you have more than one or two stocks, I would do it in a brokerage account. So even though you're paying a little bit of fee to the brokerage firm to keep track of that. It's kept track for you, and at the time of your estate settlement or passing that stock, it's a lot less headache for the people who are going to inherit it, a lot less. So we're going to take a quick break and come right back with more of the Knowledge Trust. You're listening to Investing Simplified, and give us a call. If you do have a question, you can reach us at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750, Investing Simplified. We'll be right back.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Well, you are listening to Investing Simplified, and we are back, and we've got a little bit of time to get your calls in, get your question, and see what we can do for you. 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750.
And we've got a call here from Candy in Portland. She's got a question. Candy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, and your question?
My question is, I was listening to what you're saying about inheritance tax and all that, and my mom died a little while ago, and she, I'm her beneficiary on her PERS account, so I'm going to be receiving PERS money for the rest of my life. Is that taxable under this inheritance thing?
The PERS itself, as you receive it each year, would be taxable. It's ordinary income. And would be a you're just stepping in as the survivor, it sounds like, and in that case it would be
okay. Yeah. So I know I would pay taxes on it because I mean I know I'll get a 1099 for it or whatever. But then as my mom, you know, as we're accumulating her assets, do I have to include some kind of an annuity number for this PERS benefit that's kind of part of her estate?
For the actual PERS, for a retirement pension, you typically do not. A pension is something, an income stream that somebody else is taking over, and that is not valued for estate tax purposes because there's not a death benefit that the decedent receives. And so in that case, that wouldn't be part of the taxable estate.
Okay, that's just what I wanted to know. Thank you so much.
Great, good call. Good question.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, and that's one thing, Kevin, that she was very fortunate because normally in PERS, that income option only goes to a spouse.
I was curious as she mentioned that.
Unusual. That's an unusual thing. And what may have happened is she may have put her daughter on there, but I'm surprised that they had a joint income option that would go to the surviving child. I have not seen that on there.
Exactly, that would be transferable. That's a good
advantage for her, for Candy.
Absolutely.
Very good thing. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, most people are disinherited at that time. They lose that income benefit.
That's right. That's an excellent question on, you know, what constitutes part of the taxable estate. and pensions that you receive from a, you know, a private company like a team or like a Teamster pensions or a Electrical Brotherhood pension. You know, there's you know, number of pensions out there that get passed on to a survivor.
Yeah. Now, what she may have been thinking about, Kevin, if somebody has a large annuity that they've annuitized and the income's going to come in and their estate's over $1 million, that income is does get a value that is included into your estate.
If it's a an annuity in that sense, that's right.
Yes. So. Unlike a pension. So there is a difference. There's a big difference here. We're talking about a pension benefit like PERS exempt.
Exactly.
If you have a large annuity and you're getting payments off that and it goes to your heirs, that has a commuted value for estate tax purposes.
Mm-hmm. And typically, the annuity has a lump sum option or a cash out option, and the value is determinable. In Candy's case here, the pension, you know, what she receives is going to be based on, you know, her lifetime. You know, she can't go and take a lump sum of the value of the account and be done with it. So that's, like you say, very big difference there.
Yeah, we should say that too. What we didn't ask Candy if her mom was already collecting PERS, because if her mom was not already collecting PERS and it was a lump sum, she would have had that lump. That's one of the questions we maybe should have asked her, if her mother was already drawing PERS at the time she passed away, because that would be a true statement. But if her mother had not started taking her retirement yet from PERS, then there would be a lump sum option, and she could have to include that value in her estate.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, it all depends. That's one point we kind of missed out there with Candy. And if that's the case, she might get back to us and let us know, because that does make a big difference. If her mom was drawing it already, that's one category. But if her mom had not started taking her PERS yet and that money was still in a lump sum option, then that's a whole different story. So really good question, though. You know, I like those things that kind of make you think a little bit about it. One of the things I should say, too, if you we're making some revisions on our website at pfgwm.com. And since I have so many clients that have called in about we were doing Social Security seminars, and a lot of people don't like to go to a seminar. They don't want to go. You can buy a dinner, and some people just come to the dinner to get the dinner. They're not there to really get the information. But people who are really interested in the information, knowing about Social Security, I have put a seminar on demand on my website. And if you go to pfgwm.com, we have a Social Security seminar. You can actually watch. You can watch it at 3 o'clock in the morning if you want. You can go through, and it gives you a lot of information, and then we provide a free Social Security analysis for you. You have to fill out some information and stuff and get it to us, but we give it to you with no obligation. We'll send it to you, and you can, if you have questions, of course, we'll be available to answer them. But rather than going to a seminar, if you want to sit home at night and look at it on the internet, you can do it. It's got some really valuable information, and understand there are thousands and thousands of options when you hit Social Security age, and not always are they clear as crystal to you. So I recommend that if you're concerned at all about it, check out that video. It's all about Social Security, and we provide it on our website now. It's free to you. You don't have to go to a dinner seminar. You don't have to. Nobody's going to hound you or anything. It's going to give you some good free information. So I'd highly recommend it if you're concerned at all about your Social Security benefits. And, you know, Kevin, looks like we got another call there from Ryan in Vancouver. Ryan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello, what's your question?
My question is around, my wife is transitioning from one job to another. She's incurred some educational expenses to be able to perform this new job. The problem is that I'm not sure she's actually going to get any income this year from the job. So I'm wondering if there's any way that I can deduct the travel and lodging expenses, despite the fact that she's not going to get a 1099 from this new job.
I see what you're saying. Job hunting expenses are deductible in the year that they're incurred. And this is the key thing. There's a number of different ways you can deduct some of these costs here, but the key is they're only deductible in the year that they are paid. And so if you can wait until next year to pay them, that would be one way to match it up with the year that the income is going to occur. If you've already paid them, probably the only way you're going to be able to deduct those is as job hunting costs on Schedule A and subject to some limitations and stuff. Not the best way, but
okay.
Yeah.
But he can't take a deduction for this year, right?
Yes, as job hunting costs. Now, if they're the actual cost of the education itself, if it qualifies her for a new job, then she's not going to be able to actually take those costs. That's, you know, any education, you know, she would be able to take a lifetime learning credit if it's an appropriate,
sure.
You know, university or vocational school. But anytime you're qualifying yourself for a new job, then the costs don't get aren't deductible.
Okay, and her new job is unique in that sometimes she'll be an employee, depending on who the firm is working with. Sometimes she'll be an employee, and then but she could also be a contractor. Is there any way if we had her as a set her up as a contractor for this year, it would change anything or no?
The contractor option opens a lot of doors there. If she truly started business before the end of the year and you get that set up, the cost once business is open, all of those business costs would be deductible, your mileage, you know, what have you, that you know, home office, those type of things, even if there's no income, so long as she's truly
perfect.
Opened the doors, it's acceptable.
Okay. All right. That's great. Thank you guys very much. I really appreciate it.
Very good questions, Ryan. Thank you. Those are some of the things that, you know, having a show like this on the air that gives you an opportunity to call in, ask questions. You don't have to go visit with a CPA. You can actually call Kevin here and ask a question or a investment question or a legal question.
Or email us.
Or email us, too.
Absolutely.
You can email us at askchuck@pfgwm. And, Kevin, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do it?
It's kstege@baker-colson.com. That's kstege@baker-colson.com. And definitely shoot me an email. We're not putting you on the clock. We are going to help you out best we can. And if there's you know, significant activity after that, then we'll talk. But we're definitely here to help you and be your ace up your sleeve.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, Kevin, your website has a lot of information on it as well, right?
That's true, at BakerColson.com or yep. Baker-Colson.com. We're not as up to date as you are, Chuck. Yours is just a bevy of information and a hive of activity. But
I would really recommend, if you're at all concerned about Social Security or you want to get some investment advice, check out pfgwm.com and also check out askthefinancialdoctor.com, and you can we have a system set up there that you can ask questions, you can email us, and we will get you back an answer. And you know, sometimes we're able to answer them on the air, which is nice too. We don't use names, so it's private. We won't, you know, when you call in, we don't know who you are, really. You say whatever name you say, we don't know who it is. But hopefully you find that information valuable, and do give us a call next week. We'll be back next week with another show, and hopefully we'll see Carl at that time.
That's right.
And we'll be able to talk about taxes, about the law, and investing. So you're listening to Investing Simplified. We'll be back next week with another show. Thank you very much for listening.